Rocking Metal Podcast on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Metal from the Inside.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Metal from the Inside podcast. It has been a long time, but I'm back, and I saw a show here in Philly back in March where this guy opened up with his band Queensryche, Mr. Todd LaTorre, and as soon as I saw the show, I've seen you guys before, but I saw you guys open up, and I was like, I'd love to have Todd on the podcast kind of as my first returning guest as I get back into the swing of things. So thank you so much, Todd, for joining me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, like I just said, I saw you guys when you were here in Philly at the Met, which is an opera house here, which I actually talked to Richie Faulkner before that date, and he thought it was kind of interesting that it was like an opera house and everything. But you guys opened up and you guys did a whole run with Priest back in the spring. And how was that in general? Because, I mean, I saw you guys. It was great. You guys got a lot of good reviews and, you know, reception from crowds and stuff. So how did that go?
It was a lot of fun. I mean, you know, to be able to get to tour with them was an honor. And before I was in the band, Queensryche had toured with Priest. I think they toured. Yeah, they did a tour with Judas Priest. And then I think they did a Halford. I think Halford with his solo thing was out on the road with Queensryche as well, if I'm not mistaken. But so it was really great for me to be able to meet those guys and see them every night. And you know, they put on a really great show with their staging setup, looks killer, and everyone in the band was really, really nice. Everything was very professional, and I think that our camp worked really, really well with theirs. So yeah, it was a lot of fun and a great experience for sure. I have no complaints. It was a good chance for people that may have dropped off the radar with Queensryche that otherwise may not have come out to see just the band alone, but because we were direct support for Judas Priest, you know, it was built in for them. And I think we showed a lot of people that the band is doing well and we're very current. And we put together an old school set because it just kind of made sense. But, you know, it was great to perform for their audience. And I know there were a lot of Queensryche fans that came out too, but I think it was a really good pairing that I'm very thankful happened, because I think these two bands that go back so far in the past, you know, we're not getting any younger. And yeah. So for the opportunity for the people to see these two bands together, I think was exciting.
Now, if I remember correctly, you guys weren't the original openers on that, but I think wasn't like Sabaton was supposed to be. And then I saw you guys and I was like, yes, honestly, I feel like you guys made more sense to me than Sabaton opening for them. I mean, I guess it would have worked, but I feel like you guys made a little bit more sense with the crowd. Yeah.
I mean, Sabaton has a huge following. As an old school fan, I stepping outside of me being in the band, I just think it's a really good pairing. You know, I'm sure that the Sabaton thing was great, but it seems to make a little more sense to me. But you know, that's because I'm kind of old fashioned in some of those ways. And having two very classic metal bands performing together that go back, you know, so far, so many decades, it did make a lot of sense. And I think a lot of people, I mean, obviously there were people that were bummed that wanted to see Sabaton finish out the run, but we were super thrilled to get picked to do that. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned you guys kind of did like an old school set, which I thought that the set was really interesting, because I mean, you guys did a bunch of stuff from obviously Operation Mindcrime, Empire, but you know, you put some stuff in there that I was a little bit surprised about, and even like left some stuff out. Like you guys didn't do I Don't Believe in Love. And I was like, ooh, like that was an interesting choice, not necessarily bad choice, but an interesting choice. So what is the process for you guys in deciding a set list like that?
You know, sometimes we'll tailor the set based on the venue and the audience that we're playing for. And, you know, there's other times where if you're playing a festival or you're on a billing that's really heavy, most people would say, oh, we got to play the heavy stuff to kind of fit in that more and cater to that demographic. But there's also something to be said for saying, you know what? We have heavier stuff. And then we have your I Don't Believe in Loves and your Jet City Womans that honestly is. I remember watching a Download festival and everybody, it was like really all these heavy, heavy bands. And then Journey came out. Here's all these guys in their battle vests. And they're like, highway run, you know, they're singing Journey looking just like, you know, a bunch of, you know, heathens. And I think it's kind of like, it breaks it up. It gives your ears something completely different. So there are times where we'll just say, you know what, we're Queensryche. Let's just play what we are. And it can be Queen of the Reich and Jet City Woman and Eyes of a Stranger and, you know, this big variety of stuff. But for that set, we thought, you know, it's the 50 years for Judas Priest. These are old school metal fans. Like, let's play, if they know Queensryche and they remember from the early days, let's play stuff off of The Warning. Let's play stuff off of the EP and Rage for Order. And we really kind of thought that would be, we haven't played some of those like The Warning and On Force. We haven't played those in a long time, many, many, many years. So we thought it would be cool to bring it back. It's a little more rocking, it's old school, and it threw a lot of people off. And then we thought, well, maybe we should play, like, we got to sprinkle some new stuff in.
Right.
And then actually we were playing a song, Man the Machine, from the Verdict album. And I remember saying to the guys, like, you know, a lot of these people just don't know this. Even though it's material that I was a part of, and I'm always wanting to perform stuff that I'm a part of too. I said, why don't we take that out and play Walk in the Shadows? Like, a lot of these people will know that. People really like to sing that one. And so that was actually me suggesting to the guys, hey, let's take a song out that I was a part of and give them another classic that I think they would appreciate. So yeah, the process is typically we will try to cater to kind of that environment and you feel the room out. And yeah. It, you know, for the most part, it seems to work pretty well.
Yeah, it's an interesting point that you bring up, because I honestly haven't really talked to too many like musicians like yourself about this, but you hear it a lot of, you know, like you were just mentioning, you know, new stuff and how you are able to kind of, you know, pepper that in with, you know, a band like Queensryche that has so many, you know, classic songs that people love. And, you know, you obviously have stuff that you have to play. You have to play Eyes of a Stranger. You cannot avoid it. You know, I'm seeing it right now with like Def Leppard on tour. They just put out a new album and it's like, you know, how many Def Leppard songs that are classic you have to play, but you also have to play some of the new stuff. So, I mean, for you, I know that you just said on, you know, this set, you kind of, you know, took one out. I mean, do you guys find it difficult, like, choosing what new songs you're going to put in, you know?
Yeah.
What songs do people know? What songs, you know, can we get away with not playing that people aren't going to get too mad that we're not playing, you know?
Yeah, that's, you know, I remember we did a tour and we had Fate's Warning out with us and we played, I want to say 40 to 50% of albums that I was a part of, which was, you know, it's kind of a ballsy move, but at the same time, you're like, you know what? There's a lot of feedback where people will say, we love these classics and we've heard these for 30 plus years. And while we love them, we really would love to hear the new stuff. Or people will say, what's the point of putting out a new record if you're not going to really support it? And that's it's a really tough thing, because you have just the casual fan that knows the Empire record and maybe a couple songs from Mindcrime, and that's it. They don't know The Lady Wore Black. They don't know Screaming in Digital. They don't know all the other songs that really, like, the old school Queensryche fans, those are the people that really know that stuff. And then when Empire came, I mean, they were already big fans of the band's music. And then that was the shift where people think that just came on board with, say, Empire, they think that kind of embodied Queensryche. And it's like, no, it doesn't. That's one facet of a big discography. But then we'll like play, you know, okay, we put a video out for that. We should play that song because people are seeing the video. They're kind of familiar with it. And there's another thing too, where it's like, you say, well, we want to be relevant and support new stuff. But the fact remains that, you know, I still say that we sell memories. And when I go see Iron Maiden or I go see Whitesnake or pick a band, it doesn't matter. I mean, I really want to hear those songs that I grew up as a teenager. And when I saw them in concert, and that was like a new album 25, 30 years ago. So it's a really hard thing because you're always going to have people that say, oh, they're playing the same old tired set. And then you have other people saying, oh, yes, I loved everything they played. And you do, like you said, you do have those staple songs. You have your Empire, Take Hold of the Flame, pretty much Queen of the Reich. We've played, I've been in the band 10 years now. And from day one, we've never taken that out. And of course, Eyes of a Stranger. So you do have those staple songs. And when we're creating the set, we're like, okay, do we play The Mission or do we play The Needle Lies? Or do we play, you know, and it's kind of tough to do that. But I think when we do our ground tours, we definitely are, you know, try to push some newer stuff. And it makes it fun. I mean, you want to make the audience happy, but at the same time, we're the ones playing the music.
Exactly.
So we want to enjoy what we're doing. So it can get hard because you start counting the staple songs and you're like, oh shit, there's half the set. What do you do? You know, it's not easy, but we try our best to make a set that the people will like and satisfies us as well. So.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you're never going to make everybody happy. You know, there's always going to be one song that you left out that one person's going to type on Facebook, like, can't believe you didn't play that one, you know?
Like people will say, oh, they didn't play Silent Lucidity. And then other, you know, then there'll be 30 people that go, I could care less if you ever play that song again. And right. So you have this mixture. It is what it is, but you know, we try.
Yeah. And I know, you know, with all the new stuff you've released, I know I want to get into your solo record in a couple minutes.
Yeah.
But the producer that you guys have worked with for the last two Queensrÿche albums, he's done such a killer job, and those two albums sound so great. And what I love is from a lot of Queensrÿche fans, you know, like we're kind of just talking about, they love the classic stuff, but I've heard from so many Queensrÿche fans who love the classic stuff so much that they really love those latest two Queensrÿche records. Like they rank them pretty high and their favorites, you know, from the discography. And you know, you've now been in the band for, I think just last week, right? It like marked 10 years of you being in the band.
I think it was, well, when it was actually announced online that it was under the name Queensrÿche.
Okay.
I want to say it was July, but we did two shows under the name Rising West as a side project, and then shit hit the fan with their old singer and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So I think that it was sometime in July when it was on billboard.com that I was the new singer of the band. But yeah, it's been 10 years. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's been, you know, a decade and you've released these records and they're in such high regard for fans. I mean, for you, you know, going out with them, it's now that it's been a decade and you kind of put your name and your kind of staple on this classic band that I'm sure, you know, you listened to when you were younger and everything. I mean, how does it feel for you to have it now be 10 years? You're like, probably like, holy shit, right? Can't believe it's been a decade.
It's kind of sad because it's like, have 10 years already gone by? Like it's like, you know, now I'm 48, you know, I was 38, now I'm 48. And in the blink of an eye, I'll be 58. And that's kind of freaky, but it's been really awesome that, you know, I wasn't a one album guy and that they've embraced me as an equal person in the band from pretty much every standpoint. I mean, creatively, with whether it's video, you know, coming up with video concepts to album artwork to writing lyrics. And I mean, I drummed on The Verdict. So, I mean, they've really just, we all pitch in and it's been really great, especially on this last record. the newest one that's coming out in October, you know, everyone was so eager to be involved. I mean, whether it's other people writing lyrics and melodies, and I'm working with Casey on, oh, this would be a cool drum part, to me showing Michael some guitar riffs. Everybody, Michael's written some lyrics and shown me melodies. So we've all just kind of been all together in this new record. And yeah, I have seen a couple. I've had some friends send me, oh, check this out. Here's somebody doing a ranking of the Queensryche discography, and they've ranked the records you've been a part of like way up there. Like it's usually after Empire, but there have been a couple that are after Mindcrime and you know, whatever. So to have all those other records kind of go drop below the stuff that I've done with the band is really awesome. And I know that the 2013 record was kind of that fork in the road. Like, okay, now this sounds like Queensryche again, because I mean, let's be honest, for many, many years, it just didn't. And then that first record came, and then we brought Zeus in to do Condition Human. And that was another step up. And then The Verdict was its own thing. And he did that. And then he just did this last one. So he actually has three Queensryche records under his belt with us, but he understands all of our personalities and our quirks. And he knows everything we've already done, you know, like all the tricks we've tried to pull out and do things. So we've talked about the next record, and okay, we've done, you know, three records of a collection of songs. This next one that we're going to do after the new one that comes out, we have a whole new idea for how we're going to approach this record, which is nothing like we've done in the past. And I'm excited about that one, because I feel like these last three to four records were really great records, but they're just a collection. I would like to do something conceptual, and where, you know, when you press play, it doesn't end until it's over. So all of the little segues and all the little things that happen, where it's not just like da 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 silent and then the next song. I want everything to intertwine and flow and be, and that's something everybody kind of really likes, the idea of kind of like what Mindcrime was, but not continuing on anything like that, but starting from maybe a conceptual standpoint. Because when you do that, your story's kind of, it's already kind of laid out. You say, okay, this is an exciting part of the story. Here's where the music shifts and it changes. And so I think that might be really, really cool to approach the next one. But, you know, people seem to like the last several records we've done, and I don't know what they're going to think of the new one. Hopefully they like it, but you never really know. We just wrote songs and did the best we could, and there'll always be another record with more songs. So,
yeah. And, you know, I've heard from a lot of fellow fans who are, you know, big Queensryche fans, and I promise I'm not trying to get you to talk any shit. There's a point to this. Okay. There's a point to this.
Fine.
You know, so, I mean, in my experience as a Queensryche fan, you know, over the years, there's been a lot of people who are, I'm very team Jeff Tate. I'm very team Todd. Like, you know, it's kind of like, you see it in a lot of, you know, these bands that have, you know, new singers or whatever. But I, with you specifically, have seen so many people who are, you know, I only think it's Queensryche with Jeff, and they see you guys and they're like, oh shit, Todd's the real deal. You know, this makes sense. So, and you know, a lot of people feel that you coming in, you're really reinvigorated the band, you know, it's really feels like Queensryche again. And the point of my question, again, not to get you to say anything that's going to be like clickbait worthy, but more so of just, you know, how does it feel for you to have people feel like this band that they grew up loving and admiring and, you know, going to see since the EP came out, you know, are now looking at you and going, wow, like you've really breathed, you know, new life into this band.
First of all, people have to remember, I was a big fan of this band too.
Yeah.
So I get it. When people are like, oh no, DeGarmo, oh no, Jeff, and now Scott's not playing with him and blah, blah, blah. You know, I understand that purist mentality. At the same time, if people aren't getting along, or if people want to, they just don't want to do it anymore for whatever reasons, you know, some people say, oh, they should have just, you know, stopped the name and gone, continued under Rising West. You say, wait a minute, you still have Michael Wilton and Eddie Jackson, who are very much, you know, they're founding members of this band. They're supposed to just throw away their legacy and the name that they've spent their whole lives building up to, because, you know, a percentage of the original guys aren't in the band anymore. Like, you know, fuck you. You know, they have every right to do, you know, they own the name. It's their band. When I came in, obviously I felt, oh my God, you know, this is a lot to live up to. But I already kind of went through that when I was in Crimson Glory. And I, you know, from day one, you know, there were people saying how awful I sound, how I don't have the stage presence, how I don't have the richness in my voice or whatever. And it's been 13 years that I've had, I mean, I've read, you know, the most god-awful comments you could imagine. Yeah. You know, when my dad passed away, you know, he committed suicide back in 2014. I remember somebody saying, you know, I'd shoot myself if my kid sang like that too. You know, and it's like, people say,
what the fuck is wrong with people?
But you know what? It's not a reflection of me, how I am as a singer. It's just purely a reflection of them, of maybe they're musicians that didn't get that opportunity, or, you know, whatever the case is. Maybe it's envy, maybe it's jealousy, maybe it's people take stuff so personally that they're like, that's my band. And I mean, you look at like the Dimebag Darrell thing, where it's like, you know, this isn't Pantera, and whatever the case is, some nut job, you know. And there have been instances where I've had death threats made on me. You know, you're going to eat an effing bullet if you're at this next show, to where we've had to notify all the authorities and security with photographs of people and say, if this person, they are not allowed in, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's this shit. There's some wackos out there. And at the end of the day, we're just like, wow, this is just music. Like, we're just playing songs. Like, the fuck is your problem? You know, people are so like fanatically, obsessively, you know, just fixated on certain things. And it's creepy. But I knew that I was going to be subject again, even more so, because Queensryche was a much bigger band than Crimson Glory. And he was always the original singer. So it's like, well, who's this guy? You know, okay. So I just said, you know, I don't care. I'm just going to sing to the best of my ability on this day. Never mind, I might have sinus problems, or I've been talking and my throat's tired, and I've been in airplanes and I'm not acclimated to, you know, altitudes, like whatever, you know. And they want this exact perfect replication of what they heard on the record, which they weren't getting before anyway. But, you know, it's not realistic. But there are people that have come up to me at shows and said, hey, I owe you an apology. And I'm like, I don't even know you. What are you talking about? And they'll say, you know, I, for years, I was like, you know, no Jeff Tate, no Queensryche, no this, no that. And I didn't like you, but I figured I'd come out and see it, and I'll be damned. You won me over, and everything I said, I take back, and I'm sorry that I ever said that. And of course, I wouldn't know that they said that, but they feel compelled to tell me, you know, wow, you know, the band sounds awesome. You're doing a great job. You do have those similarities of what we expect to hear, but it's not like this perfect clone. Like, you still are who you are, but you have those nuances and subtleties that the songs that they need. I think that there are a lot more people that appreciate what the band is doing and have accepted me in the band than there are the opposite of that. But, you know, when I hear, like, it was something the other day, I forgot we were putting a little teaser, a 15-second teaser of something on the new record, and it was out, and, you know, all the trolls come out and they're like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, this doesn't sound anything like Queensryche. It's like, you literally heard 15 seconds. And it totally sounds like Queensryche.
Right.
But I think people just, you know, they just don't have any reservation anymore. And everyone is so quick to just react and say whatever they want online. Like, those people would never say that shit to my face.
Never.
You know? And now, like, I don't care. You know, I mean, I'm still a human being. You know, I have really thick skin when it comes to this kind of stuff. But, you know, there are times occasionally where it's like, you know, wow, that kind of hurt a little bit. Why, you know, why would some, and that lasts about 3 seconds. And then I go, it's just another sad individual. Like, yeah. If you were given the opportunity I was afforded, you would take it. You would have to be an idiot not to take it. Like, if I never accepted this gig, I would, and there was somebody else, I would always be thinking to myself, maybe I'm better than that guy. Maybe I think I could have done a better job, or damn, that guy does great, but that could have been me. You know, I remember seeing years ago, it was a Poison show, which I wasn't particularly interested in seeing, but Dawkins was on the bill. And Sebastian Bach.
Yes. That was like back in like 2007. I remember that.
Okay. So I went to that in Tampa. And I remember I was with my neighbor who lives across the street, who's a musician, a very talented guy. And I remember standing out there kind of in the lawn area watching. And I was like, damn, that should be me. I feel like I belong up there, not with that band, but on that level.
Yeah.
I had no idea that, you know, 4 or 5 years later, I would actually be doing it. And I know those people now, you know, and it's pretty surreal. But yeah, there are people that try to pick the camps. And I actually met Jeff. Well, I've met him a couple times, but the one time that we met was in Spain, and he came up to me and he tapped me and I shook his hand and we talked for about 15 minutes and we took a selfie. We thought it'd be funny. And I said to him, look, I know a lot of people try to pin us against each other. You created a sound and style of singing, in my opinion, and you're very influential to why I sing the way I do. You and Bruce Dickinson and, you know, Halford and some others. But I said, people like to complain about singing high notes, or that said, I don't care if you ever sing another high note in your life. You don't have to. You've done more than people, you know, people could ever dream to do musically. And just wanted you to know, like, you know, I don't give a shit about any of that stuff. And he felt the same way. And it was a respectful conversation. But, you know, and then it was funny because he was quoted as saying, and he didn't say this to me, but he said that he said it to me, was that he said, oh, you know, you sound great. You sound just like me. He didn't say that part to me, but he said that in an interview. And then I'm thinking to myself, well, all these haters of me, you got the guy saying that I sound like him. So, I mean, what a weird thing for those people to have to swallow. But yeah, we've converted a lot of people, and people, you know, there's this guy in the front, and you know, a few songs in, he's kind of drops his arms, and I'll you know, do that to him, like, yeah, man, you know, we're having fun. And next thing you know, they're smiling and they're like, fucking hey, dude, you did a killer job. The band was great. And that's all that it takes, one at a time. And they'll tell their friends. So when we go out again, there were people like, I know you're friends with Pete Pardo and that camp there. And some of those people came out to our one-off show when we were on the Judas Priest run. And some people said, I only came because I saw your set with Judas Priest, but I wanted to see more of your show. So I came to your own headline show.
Yeah.
Perfect. I mean, what more could you ask for?
No, you know? It's you're so right. I feel like in so many of these situations, the fans think that you guys behind the scenes are like, fuck you, like, and it's not like that at all. It's the people who are pitting you guys against each other who are the ones who are saying, fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, you guys have no conversations. It's fine. Like, it's not that serious.
Well, and then you'll see other bands where, you know, why can't they just get their shit together and put it aside? And it's like, you know, that's like your friends telling you to get back with your ex because they think you were a good couple. And you're like, well, it didn't work out and we're cool, but we're not together anymore. So it's like everybody, it's like telling all these people, hey, I really liked you with this person and you should be back together again.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not so easy, you know, because we're on stage for an hour, hour and a half. but it's the other 22 and a half hours that you're together.
Yeah.
And that's a huge component, that you're traveling together, you're living together, you're eating together, you're doing everything together. And if there are clashes outside of the musical aspect, that's a big deal. And that will trickle over into the musical aspect as well. You're not going to want to write together. You don't even want to fucking be on the same stage as that person. And you, there's resentment, and it's a shitty thing. So in closing to that whole thing,
yeah,
I really wish people would just be thankful that these bands are still around, because you know, there's going to come a time where Judas Priest hangs their hat and the Scorpions hang their hat and Van Halen isn't around anymore in the way that we know. And Queensryche one day will retire, or people pass away. And like we're, you know, this is life.
Yeah.
And people should just embrace the music and enjoy it. And you still have at least an original member in the band. I mean, we played, I don't know, a week ago with, and Quiet Riot was on the bill.
Rudy, yeah.
And Rudy was there, and it was like, people love to see that, and they got to hear those songs, and it's like, let them just enjoy it and put all that other crap aside. If you want to be a purist, then sit home and watch old YouTube videos and don't embrace the live experience. But that's what we do. That's how we make a living. And, you know, there's a lot of people that still appreciate that.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's you're so right. A lot of that, you know, like the Judas Priests of the world. I mean, there's realistically, yeah. I mean, it's not that far off for, you know, them to do yeah. their last gig or have it be, you know, right now, you know, David Coverdale is out there, like Whitesnake's done. That you hearing him sing Deep Purple Burn, it's like, it's never going to happen again soon.
I know. And you know, I don't know if he would pass the torch to somebody like Dino, for example. There's a lot of speculation that people think maybe, you know, obviously that I would probably have to say Coverdale is, and Dio are probably his biggest influences when yeah. you hear how he sings. You know, he doesn't sing like Queensryche. He doesn't sing like Iron Maiden. He sings like he's a blues rock soulful singer with all these little scales and trills. You know, that's his thing. I mean, he's very good at that. He has a great voice. It makes you wonder, are they going to do that like Foreigner did? And then here's the other thing. Will the fans embrace that? Because Foreigner does it and they still fly the banner and they play the songs and people have a great time. But you know what? I mean, Gary Cherone in Van Halen, for whatever reason, didn't work out. I mean, there are bands that have tried those singers that it just didn't work, even if it was awesome.
Yeah.
There's that thing with the audience that there could be this little X factor. And it's just, for whatever reason, they're just not going to take it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when Coverdale sings those songs, if this is the final thing for him, people should really pay attention and embrace that moment, because one day he's not going to do that anymore. And you're going to, like, I never saw Rush. I never saw Dio. Dio played 5 minutes from my house back in the 2000s. And I was like, oh, he'll come back again, because I was busy with other things and I couldn't go, but I never got to see him. And now it's like, fuck.
The Dio thing, a quick funny story. So, you know, I learned everything I learned musically from my parents, and my dad was a huge Dio fan growing up, huge. And so back when we, you know, I'm only 22. So back when we were doing, we were on vacation, like, 2009, I was like 9 years old, right? We were on vacation at the beach. I know.
Sorry. It's just, you're like a little baby.
But we were, you know, we were at the shore and he was playing, it was in August. It was somewhere close. It was like the Jersey Shore. He was playing right around that area.
Yeah.
And, you know, I grew up listening to the music. I was not this yet. I was 9 years old. Like Alice Cooper was still my favorite. And like, you know, I was not super passionate about, didn't know the discography of Dio yet. And, sure. You know, we were on vacation and my dad thought about it. And he was like, you know, as much as I want to have her, you know, me and my brother experience it, it's like, you know, we're on vacation. It is what it is. Right. Yeah. And it ended up being his very last show that he ever played.
Ever.
And my dad never, ever, ever.
Oh my God. So it wasn't like the last tour. This was the last show.
It was the last show he ever played. And, you know, he's my dad's favorite. And then my dad started to feel all this regret because he wanted me to see it and I never got to see it. And, but it's one of those things where, again, you never know. And if anything the last 2 years has taught me about live music is that I will never take another show for granted. Buy the tickets, buy the plane ticket, go experience it, because, you know, one day it's March 12th and you have a bunch of shows scheduled, and then it's March 13th, 2020. And it's,
there's nothing. No, totally. Yeah. There are some artists that I would really want to see. I've never seen Paul McCartney. I've never seen Elton John or Billy Joel. I did see Stevie Nicks, and then I did see Fleetwood Mac, which was amazing. I've never seen The Police, and they did like a thing years ago. Yeah. I've never seen Pink Floyd in any incarnation. There are bands that, you know, I mean, I did see Robert Plant. I actually met him and had dinner with him one time. For about an hour and a half at our dinner table, the whole thing. And he was so cool. And he was doing a solo thing, and the Black Crowes were the opening act for him. And it's like, I got to see Robert Plant live. Like, it wasn't Led Zeppelin, but, you know, I know people that remember seeing Hendrix live. I have friends that saw Zeppelin and Janis Joplin and the Doors. And so, you know, when you're my age, you're going to meet a 22-year-old who's going to go, I've heard of Iron Maiden, and they don't, you know, I wish I could have seen Iron Maiden or Metallica or Pantera. I mean, I saw Pantera in like 92, you know, I was 18 and I drove to this little club in Tampa, and there was like 200 people. It was like this small before they blew up. And it was like, and then I saw them out with Skid Row, you know, playing an arena. And so, yeah, people should just be like, oh, you know, that's not this band. That's, you know, it's not Queensryche. It's not Judas Priest without blah, blah, blah. It's not, you know, fuck off, man. Just go enjoy it, because, you know, you're just going to miss it. You're, you know, or stay home. Stay home, because we're all going to embrace it while we can. And we'll have those memories forever. You know, and they don't,
yeah.
You know, and it's supporting the artist, because publishing isn't what it used to be. Believe me, if it were, my record sales would have purchased, you know, houses for me, you know, but we tour, we work really, really hard. And, you know, and when you do a record, you spend so much time creating this song in every aspect of the song. And then you finally record it. And then you do the album with the artwork and everything's done. And then you put out a 15-second teaser and some douchebag goes, oh, this ain't fucking, fuck you. You don't know it. They don't know how records are made. They're never going to make a record. And, you know, so you just toss those people aside. You say, the people that know what's up, they know what's up.
Right.
And now with bands touring again, it's cool to like, it feels kind of weird sometimes to be on a stage again with an audience in front of you, because for 16 months we were totally shut down and it was a weird time. I remember the first time we got back on a stage, it was like, this feels really weird. I hope I can still sing. Like, we haven't done this in so long. Like, what's this going to be like? And,
well, you guys tour so frequently too, like before the pandemic, I mean, you guys,
We do about 100 shows a year.
Yeah. So like to go from that to nothing, it's like, what a lifestyle change.
Yeah. You know what? I saw a lot of Netflix and I did a lot of stuff around the house and I got to spend time with my wife because, you know, I'm gone a lot. So, you know, just, I get to spend time with my mom and see some of my buddies, you know, even if we were like, hey, we got to keep our distance or we'll wear a mask or whatever, you know, just to really just, for somebody that lives out of suitcases and hotel rooms and airplanes, it was really nice. Like, there's one part of me that didn't miss it at all. because I love being home.
Yeah.
And then there's the other part where you're like, I miss the guys and I miss that. I miss all of what that is to tour and to play music and hang with your buddies, you know, cause we're all really, really close. So, yeah, it was a weird time. And I don't know what it was like for you. What was it like for you?
It was weird. So, I mean, it was a really weird time because I, at the time, was finishing college and, I had a lot of plans, as many people did, and I was going to graduate and I was going to try to go out on tour and do all this stuff. And, you know, like everything came to a crashing halt and it was weird. I like presented my senior thesis over Zoom and it was just like a weird, it was strange. Definitely. And, you know, on top of that, it, you know, I live music, not only now is talking about it and whatever my career, but like, it's my favorite thing to do. I love to see concerts. It was devastating to, and as I'm sure as a performer, it was the same for you, you know, to not be able to, and like, yeah. Looking back on the last show I went to and going, oh my God, I took that shit for granted. Like I would do anything to pay $20 for a beer right now. Like I would literally do anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it was definitely a weird time. And again, it's like every show that I can go to, or it definitely taught me a huge lesson of like, just do it. No question. Yeah. Just do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's, especially now, like, again, we talk about all these like legacy artists that eventually are going to, you know, close the chapter. It's like, we lost 2 years of that. These guys are getting older. You know, it's like Ozzy, I somehow managed to see Ozzy the like 10 shows he did back at the end of 2019 before. I don't know if he's ever going to tour again. Probably not.
I've never seen Ozzy.
Wow. Really?
No.
That's shocking.
I know.
Man.
I can assure you, you've seen way more in the last, you've probably seen more concerts since you were 15 than I've probably seen in my whole life. But well, I've been to a lot, but.
Well, it's like, especially now with, I mean, you're touring all the time. I mean, how often do you get to go to
I don't feel like it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like working in a pizzeria and then wanting pizza for dinner. It's like, no, right. It's the last thing I want to do is go out in a bunch of crowded thing. Yeah, I just.
Right.
It's lost its allure to me because that's what you do for a living. Yeah. But there are times where it's like, okay, I got to go see that. Like I'm a super fan. I really want to go and I'll go do that. But I mean, and honestly, like in all fairness, because we play festivals and I do get to see a lot of concerts. You know, if we're playing a festival, we're on a bill, I get to go side stage and watch this band play or that band play. So it's not like I don't see live music, but it's not the same as like before where you're like you and your friends, you and a couple girlfriends, let's say, are going to go, we're going to go have dinner and then we're going to go see this band. And it's like a thing.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's not a thing. It's just I'm killing time.
Let me catch, you know, like 10 minutes of this band set before I have to go like get ready to go on stage or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, it's like the pros and cons of anything, right? I mean, like there's sometimes too where, you know, it's a weird thing, you know, like working in music where I'm surrounded by music all the time and there 99% of the time I love it. And then there are some times where I want to go home and I don't want to listen to anything. I like want to sit in silence.
We don't have a stereo in the house. There's not a stereo in the house. If I'm like cleaning or doing shit around the house, I'll put on YouTube and I'll be like, okay, I'll play full album of, you know, what I want to hear in, or like just 80s stuff or 70s, you know, I'll just put on like some Steely Dan. And then when that song's done, it'll play something around that style. But there's times where I come home, I'm around people all the time and you know, and the noise. And it's just like, I don't want to hear music. I don't want to hear a bunch of loud anything. I just want to be quiet. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for just silence and peace and quiet, you know.
But I want to touch on the solo record because it is so great. And I know that is one thing, although a lot of Netflix was watched during the pandemic, you also wrote this entire record and recorded it. And if I'm correct, it was with your close to childhood best friend, Craig Blackwell,
helped
the majority of this, which is so cool that you guys have remained such close friends and did this record together. So I guess if you want to tell me a little bit about it, I mean, I know it's been out now for over a year, but I still love it. It was, I remember when I heard it for the first time, it was just so heavy. And I was so like, holy shit. Like, this is so, it was just so shocking, kind of in a good way, because I knew you mostly from Queensryche. And although Queensryche is heavy,
that's a different kind of heavy.
It's, it's a different kind of heavy, but in such a good way. So I guess tell me a little bit about the process of deciding you wanted to do this.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I, even before I was in Queensryche, I had demos and stuff that I had written. And then eventually I said to Craig, who the first band that I ever joined as a drummer, I was like just turned 15, maybe, was a band called Blackwell. And they played at our high school, like talent show. And he was like the shredder. He was like the guy, you know? And so I was a drummer, and then we continued this like brotherhood friendship till today. And we played in bands all over Tampa, you know, doing all the club thing and trying to make it as an original band. And of course that didn't happen. But I always, you know, I was like, man, remember that riff we used to do? And, you know, he used to be my roommate. And I had my drum set up in the room, and we had amps, and like, we just, the two of us would come up with these grooves. So like the beginning of the song, Critical Cynic, we actually wrote that little beginning when I, when we were like, I was like 20, what was I, 21, 22, 23, you know, and it's this cool, like, and I said, oh, you know, let's keep that. Or this, there's another middle section in the song Vexed that's kind of a musical heavy part. And that was something else that we had together. I said, oh, I always wanted to do something with that. So I called Craig and I was like, dude, I want to do a solo record, but I want to do it with you. And like, I know a million people that I could, you know, with names that I could collaborate with, but wasn't about that. It was like, I want to do what you and I always wanted to do when we were teenagers, but just didn't have an audience or the means to do it the way that we do now. So I brought him in and we wrote everything together. We recorded everything together, just the two of us. And we put that record out, and it did really, really well. You know, I mean, record sales aren't what they used to be, you know, but you know, I did a little over 4,300 in the first week, which was killer. I mean, I think it was about 500 less than Accept, than the band Accept did. So I was like, wow, you know, I would be happy if I sold maybe 1,000 total for everything. Never mind the first week. And so a lot of people seemed to really like it. It was kind of a head turner for them, because they expected that vocal delivery of Queensryche style. And I said, no, I could do a lot of other things. You know, I like gutturals. I like the raspy, you know, I've never been a real clean singer. It's hard for me to sing clean like I do in Queensryche. It's not that easy for me. But yeah, we did that, and it was really great. And then I've actually had some offers to do some festivals on my own solo stuff. So eventually I want to assemble, finish the I have a bass player ready, but I would need another guitar player and a drummer to complete the band. And then I really want to do like an East Coast run, you know, and do like, you know, 10 or 12 shows of my own. I'd like to go to Europe and play some festivals, which I believe I could get, make happen. So it's not over. I mean, these songs are going to be played live at some point. It's just getting together the unit and putting some rehearsals together, and then, you know, figuring out how I'm going to do this shit on my own. Because with Queensryche, you know, we tour on a tour bus, and we have a festival backdrop and a club backdrop, and oh, that's $6,000 for that, and this in here, this system was $10,000, and this, and it's like, okay, I'm going to have to, you know, invest in myself and get some proper staging stuff. And I don't know that I'd be able to tour in a tour bus, you know, but hell, if I have to just get in a van and a trailer and just go bang out some shows up all the way up through New York and start in Florida and work my way up, I'm going to do that. And whether it's on my own shows You know, I would love to play some small, literally like 300 seaters. Like, I think that would be really cool. So yeah. I just want to play small, packed places. Maybe I could get an opening slot with Overkill or Testament or something like that. So that would be cool. You know, maybe if they've got their full package, I could jump on as like the first support. Who knows? But I definitely want to do some live shows with that and continue to build my own thing. And yeah, during COVID, the shutdown rather, I have a home studio. Craig has a home studio. We recorded everything between our studios. And then I called Zeus and I hired him to mix and master the record. Craig and I self-produced it. And then Zeus did the mixing and mastering. It went out on Rat Pack Records, which is a great indie label. And he knows, I mean, he's great at like what he does, put together some really nice bundles. I started putting out just a little bit of merch, nothing, you know, it's not like a skateboard and fucking, you know, a gazillion. Here's an album shirt. Here's a this, here's a that. We did make some cassettes, which was pretty cool. Cause when I grew up, that's what we listened to. When I was a little kid, my mom's car, we had an 8-track in the car. And I was like, you know, I was really, really young, but I can remember putting an 8-track into the radio. But yeah, we made like some limited cassettes, which are cool for some collectors. And yeah. And I really liked it, Sydney, because as much as I love Queensryche and I love collaborating with them, there's also, you know, you're also bending and give and take, right? You're not going to get everything you want. And with my own thing, there's nobody to tell me, don't do that. I don't like that. Let's try it this way. Craig would write a riff and I'm like, that's badass. Let's move on. And we would go. So we wrote and recorded the whole thing in 4 months.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I'm starting another record, a follow-up to that. But I actually have some songs that are more like melodic death black metal that are not the follow-up. This is like another thing that I'm actually playing. I played all the guitars on it. Wow. and I did everything on it, but they're just in demo form right now. But I would like to, I don't know, maybe I'll put out an EP of that and see what that does. But that's like, even it's more like the bonus track One by One. It's a little more along those lines. But you know, I think that I tapped into something that I just don't hear anymore. You know, you really don't hear that classic kind of true metal thrash, but melodic, like Crossroads to Insanity is just, you know, a cool ballad. You know, you really don't hear that shit. Everybody wants to be so brutal and heavy all the time. And it's like, come on, man, you know, or the music's heavy and they're just screaming the whole time. Like you're not hearing real singers on really heavy music anymore. Right. Everybody's just doing gutturals, which, believe me, it takes a technique and a talent to do it, but there's no great singers singing over that stuff. I mean, maybe Opeth, he has very good vocals, but even then, you know, it's not like acrobatic style singing. They're amazing melodies and I love his voice, but I think that I tapped into almost like the shit that I like Fight and Halford, you know, Resurrection.
Yep.
And that kind of stuff where it's a little more stripped down. There's not a million notes being played everywhere and it breathes, but it's still like, I love that record that I did. And believe me, I don't listen to anything that I've done with the band. When I did The Verdict, like, and it was done, I think I listened to it a couple of times and then I was done with it because I've heard those songs so many times now, writing and recording and the whole process, I'm like burned out on the songs.
Yeah.
But when it comes to my record, I still enjoy it. Like, it's weird. I don't know.
You have, like you were saying, you know, you have definitely limitations when you're with Queensryche, because I mean, it's also a brand that's, you know, a band, yeah, brand that's been around for 30 years and
40,
you know, you have a certain audience, you have a certain,
yeah,
you have to, you know, although you can kind of go outside the box a little bit, you know, you're still are kind of confined to a little bit of what people expect from you guys.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's like, you have to keep all of that in mind.
Yeah.
And when you're, you know, now can just do anything that you want.
I can do anything. I can say anything, like, I want. I can do anything I want. It's a lot of fun. And you know, that's why artists will go outside of that yard, because it's like, I love what this band gives me, but there's just stuff that just isn't appropriate for this band. And I want to be able to do something way more extreme, or just whatever it is. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be fucking house music. It could be an acoustic thing, like James Taylor. It doesn't matter. I could do whatever I want. But in Queensryche, even though I've done some things that kind of push that a little bit, it's still Queensryche, and you have to be mindful. Even though Queensryche has a pretty big yard, there still are boundaries. And you know, I'm very respectful and mindful of that. Like I wouldn't want to do that. But not only that, when I hear the guys write the music, when Michael writes something, for example, it doesn't make me want to do something really brutal. It's like, no, that sounds like Queensryche. And so I'm going to sing kind of that way. Right. You know what I mean? So, I kind of feel like I got the best of both worlds. And once I got that record done, I almost felt like, okay, I don't have this inner compulsion's a big word. I don't want to say compulsion, but you understand the sentiment. I don't feel like I need to try to infuse this into the Queensryche thing because I'm not getting it anywhere else. So this is the only thing I'm recording. How can I try and do this Halford type high scream here without, you know, people looking at me weird? I don't feel like it's like, nope, I just doing totally in Queensryche headspace and whatever that music makes me feel like. If it's appropriate and it's a little outside of what people might expect, that's fine. But I just, you know, that music just calls for a certain sound and style and delivery. And thankfully, I interpret it that way, you know?
Yeah. I do love the fact that you have plans to do some kind of live shows in the future, because I feel like, not that it's a bad thing, but there are so many side projects that I see from people. And I mean, I understand, you know, when you have a commitment in another band or whatever, that sometimes it's hard to make time to go out and do the other thing.
Yeah, it's really hard.
So many albums that have come out that I would love to see them do a live show. And
they're not a band.
It's solely just a studio project. Like we talked about Dino De Lucic earlier, and I bring this up all the time. He did this album with George Lynch under... Yeah.
Dirty Shirley.
And I love that record. I don't know what it is about it. I love that record. And they never even met each other. They recorded it in two separate countries. They never met each other. I don't even think they've met each other since then. And like, you know, obviously no plans to do, you know, any touring. It was like a one and done type of thing.
Yeah.
And although it's like, I love the album and I'm glad it came out, I'm like left wanting more from it. So I'm glad that you have, you know, at least maybe some want to do live shows.
I'm definitely going to do live stuff. I'm 100%, no questions asked. There was something I was just going to say that you reminded me of. Oh, I know what it was. A lot of people talk about like timing a tour with the album release, right? Yeah. They'd be like, okay, the album comes out this date and you want to tour right when the album breaks. And for me, honestly, I kind of like, I don't know, maybe it translates into like first week sales, and that's a variable that they're mindful of that I'm not considering. But putting that part aside, I kind of prefer the record come out and like a few months later then tour on it. Because when you play a new song, they just don't know it. They're just standing there like that. And so you're like, did this go over well? Because everyone was amped up about this song, and now we play the new one and they're all just kind of like, are they bored? Are they just digesting it and taking it in?
Yeah.
It's hard to get a read on the audience, even though, you know, maybe on the record, you're like, this kicks ass. Think people are really going to like this. You play it live, but they just don't know it. By the time I get to do my own stuff, people know the record and they're going to sing along. So when they start singing parts, it's like, I'm glad that I didn't. It's maybe like you, like, oh, I've been wanting to see this live for so long now. I finally get to.
Right.
And the people will come out and they'll embrace that. I know there's a lot of studio projects that are killer that are never meant to be anything more than that. and you're just probably not going to see it live. If maybe not for a while anyway.
Yeah, it's a lot of that. That's kind of what I've noticed. I'm not sure if you are how familiar you are with Ghost, but Ghost is kind of doing that. They came out with a new album back in March, and they've done shows, but they're kind of peppering in the new singles like very slowly, like playing one song here. And it's been, you know, now it's June. It came out in March. So they're, you know, they didn't play a lot of the new stuff right away when they were still out on tour when the album came out. And I think that they're trying to maybe do what you just described of like have people now listen to it. They know the songs really well. They know the songs that people like a lot, yeah, that are catchy or whatever. And they're now kind of like here and there.
They are a massive band right now.
Yeah.
Not my cup of tea. But their production is huge. They're charting, their sales are ridiculous. They're a fucking huge band. And, you know, if we get to do this again sometime, one of the topics that I always find interesting is, and I'll try to make it as brief as possible, how, you know, you have your top tier bands, right? And you know where I'm going with it. You have your top tier bands that are your kit that can sell, never mind arenas, stadiums, but we'll just say arenas. Let's just say arenas anywhere in the world. Okay. Not on a package, not a festival, their own show. You got Iron Maiden, Guns N' Roses, Metallica, probably the Foo Fighters, even though they're not metal, but we'll just lump them in there. We'll lump another rock band in, Pearl Jam. And I guess that's there's like maybe a couple, the Rolling Stones, but dude, nobody else. Let's just say there's less than 10 bands that can sell arenas in the metal world. I can only think of two, Metallica and Iron Maiden. I don't know another metal band that can sell stadiums or arenas worldwide. I don't care what day of the week it is. And the question is, what bands, when those bands fall off, what bands are going to replace those at that level? My answer is none. I don't believe there's a band. I don't believe we live in a time right now where that is going to happen. As great as a band can be, and it's not a metric of how good a band is. Yeah. We're just talking about how big they are. And although Ghost is a huge band, I don't know one of their songs. I don't know how many records they've put out. I couldn't tell you one song title. They're a great band for what they do. It's just not my style.
Yeah.
But who else is, you know, are they, can they sell arenas all around the world? Maybe. I don't know. I know they're playing arenas. I'm talking about selling out arenas, not sectioned off, but selling out arenas worldwide, especially, you know, when you look at how far Iron Maiden is in their career, Metallica, you know, 30 years down the road, you know, what bands are going to do that? I just don't think they exist. I mean, bands that I used to watch in arenas, like Quiet Riot was selling out their own arenas. Rat was selling out their own arenas. I used to go and see them.
Right.
You know, Rat would sell out my arena. I saw Rat when Robin Crosby was in the band. Like, I saw the original Rat play Bayfront Center, which is an arena down here. I don't think, you know, Queensryche doesn't sell arenas. We play clubs and theaters, yeah, and we get to play amphitheaters with a billing of, but, you know, let's get real. You know, there just are not these bands that are going to be filling that void.
Yeah. I mean, Ghost is on there. Like, I mean, you look back on all those bands, right, that you just mentioned, it's like, mm-hmm, by the time these bands got to their fourth album, like, they were huge, you know, like they were massive. And although Ghost is massive to a certain extent, as massive as a band like you're saying can get nowadays, I mean, they're on, this is the fourth album. Like, you know, like they're
so
not.
Is this their fourth record?
This is the fourth album.
Okay, well.
And so, I mean, like, you know, I'm not saying there's not any room for growth because, you know, they're on
that trajectory. I mean, Rammstein, yeah, they're massive, yeah, but. You know, I mean,
you're 100% right. It's like Iron Maiden, Metallica, Megadeth can't do it. Although I saw them with Lamb of God, it was you know, not, I love Megadeth, but it was not sold out and it was like an amphitheater, you know, other, I don't know really. I'm trying to think of it.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe Slayer did.
Yeah.
Maybe Slayer did when, before they retired, but now, you know, they're not, I don't see these, but the reason why it made me think of it is I heard some people talking about this and they mentioned that Ghost, they believed Ghost would be the next Iron Maiden type selling out band. And I was like, you know, I wouldn't take that bet. You know, I mean, I don't think that, yeah. And it's nothing against them. I just don't think, okay. I think it's a different time. I mean, I remember growing up, you know, there was no internet. It wasn't a thing for the people. And, you know, I remember when a pager came out, I had a beeper in high school where it was like, call me, I was on a number. And we went to real record stores and like you stood in line for the Ticketmaster line to like buy tickets. So this whole online thing, there was no YouTube. There was, you know, if you had a music video, like you were a big deal. That was a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, it was a really big deal. And I think that audience remembers that time, because when you were on MTV, for example, that put you at a massive superstar kind of level. And that was certainly the perception was, holy shit, who is this? I should be paying attention because they're on MTV. And now we don't have that. Everybody has videos and it doesn't mean anything. And then there are bands with videos with 2 million views, but they sold 200 records in their first week.
Right.
They couldn't sell a 500 seater on their own. The translation isn't the same. It doesn't mean the same thing. So it'll be interesting as we all keep going through this in time and see over the years, what's going to happen? What's going to change?
It's scaring me. It's scaring me. I came in on like the tail end of a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, like again, like we talked about, I'm so thankful that I'm getting to see so many of these bands, you know.
Totally.
Although I wish I could have seen Judas Priest in the early 80s or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I still get to see him now. But yeah, I mean, it scares me for what this genre is going to look like a decade from now.
Yeah.
You know, what is it going to look like without the Priests? And I mean, I still think Maiden has some time left, but again, I mean, they've been around
40 I know.
Years. So I it's know. Like what's going to happen?
and when I listen to a lot of satellite radio, like metal stuff, honestly, in fact, it's interesting. I just watched an interview and Geezer Butler was on there and he was asked the question, what does he listen to? Of course, he likes Rival Sons, which I think are a phenomenal band. I love them. And he really likes Mastodon. But he said the same thing that I'm saying is he put on one of the metal stations. And he can't differentiate one band from the next. And I can't either. And unless you know that band's songs, it's all.
Yep.
And it doesn't sound original. It doesn't sound inspiring. It is not emotional other than just very linear one thing.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, wow, okay, I'm glad that somebody else is expressing that I feel the same way. It all sounds like the same boring, tired crap. There's a few bands that stick out, like Gojira, that I'm like, okay, that's identifiable. They have a certain sound. But for a lot of the other stuff that these bands, they all just are trying to be so heavy. And it's like, they, you know, they're doing pig squeals and they're doing 7-string guitars that are tuned so low, they're eating up bass guitar frequencies. And it's just become kind of stupid to me, you know, a lot like what I'm hearing. There doesn't sound like any originality anymore. And it makes you wonder if half these drummers can play what they're actually, what I'm hearing.
Not programmed, right, yeah.
Not all just, yeah, edited to sound. I mean, there are some amazing drummers, don't get me wrong, but it's like, man, cut that guy's foot off. Like, let the music breathe a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like one of two ways. I've noticed it's either, and like working at an active rock station, I work, it's a terrestrial radio station.
Yeah.
You know, it's either so melodic that it's almost pop.
Yep.
And although I'm a big melodic rock fan. You know, mm-hmm. I gravitate towards, I love my heavy stuff, but I love it when it has a little bit of melody in there. So, yeah. I mean, but sometimes it's like, this is borderline, like could be on a pop station if you really tried to market it the right way. Or yeah. again, it's like what you're saying, like, it's so heavy that it's just boring.
It doesn't even sound musical anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of stuff. I mean, and I love really heavy stuff, but I guess it's the, like at a small dose, I'm like, yeah, that's cool. And then I hear something else and I'm like, I have no idea. Like that band sounds kind of exactly like that band. And right. then, and so when you listen to these for like 30 minutes, you're like, that all kind of just sounded like the same to me. Like that could have been one record.
Yep.
And I wouldn't know that those are 10 different bands. Whereas you put on, you know, you listen to the older, and granted, heavy today is not heavy back then, right? Back then, when I heard Kiss of Death from Dokken, you know, that was heavy. When you heard Cowboys from Hell, you know, that was, you know, Vulgar Display of Power, or what, you know, that was like, God damn, that sounds tough and heavy. That's now it's like, that's not
Child's
even
play. Yeah. It's like,
Child's play. So then I gravitate more to that melodic stuff that we're talking about, where it's like, hey, I want to listen to some old Warren. I want to listen to Dokken and Rat and like the 80s and Dio and, you know, the 80s stuff that was still like musical. It was heavy for the time. But wow, you really got to differentiate. I can hear the bass line. I can hear the guitar tone. I can hear harmony backing vocals. Yeah. I can hear, you know, all of these aspects that are musical, even though it was heavy. Now today, it just, I don't know. I find myself feeling more inspired by just going even further back again. Yeah. And maybe that's like when I did my solo record, I said to Craig, man, I just want to do the stuff that as metal fans, we like. I don't care if nobody likes my record. I won't be offended. I want to do what I think is pleasing to my ears.
Yeah.
This is what I like. And even though we're not tuned crazy, crazy low, you hear a song like Vanguards of the Dawn Wall or Hellbound and Down, and even Crossroads to Insanity. It's dark and it's heavy, but it's a ballad and it's melodic. Yeah. And it's like, I wish that metal bands cared more about having real singers, because a lot of metal bands just, they think just screaming makes you like, you're not a singer, you're a vocalist. Maybe they can sing and they're not doing it, but I'd sure like to hear that somewhere,
right?
You know, even if it's like split up with the heavy stuff. Anyway, that's my little side rant. But the Ghost thing was an interesting topic because they're a huge band right now, and they're selling a lot, you know, they're definitely selling a lot, and they're tapping into, like, I think they're still grasping like the older people, the older demographic, and then they're getting like these newer younger people like your age that, you know, really into them. So to come out with their fourth album and they're grasping up, they're casting a pretty big net, you know, and they're doing a really good job with that.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're one of those bands that, again, are very, like, polarizing. Like, I see people either just love them or they think they're, like, pansy, like, candy, sugar-coated, like, bullshit. You know, like, it's one or the other.
I like the music. I really like the music.
It's the image for you? Is it the image that does it?
Well, the image for me just doesn't match what I'm hearing.
Right.
It's a weird thing for me, but vocally it's a vocal thing.
As a vocalist, I could understand, like, as you being a vocalist, I can understand why that would be.
Yeah. And again, for what it is, they're obviously they're great.
Yeah.
But for me, it's a vocal thing and it just misses the mark for me.
No, I get it. You know, but
no, but I have a lot of respect. I mean, what's the guy's name? Tobias
Forge. Yeah.
Yeah. That guy is on top of his game. I mean, he the marketing, everything that guy's doing is right.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing everything, like, he's breaking through in a way that bands just aren't. So I have an immense amount of respect for, I don't know him, but I do respect the vision that he has and what he's doing.
Yeah.
It's just Yeah. And parts of it kind of remind me of Blue Oyster Cult, which I love.
Yep.
You know, and we've toured with them. They're really great people. And I love those old sounds. So there are songs where I'm like, okay, if I take away the visual and I just try to listen to that for what it's worth, and I think Blue Oyster Cult mode, there are pieces that I do like.
Right.
But as a whole, when it's like a heavy thing and then the singing comes in, that's where I kind of lose my interest. But, you know, hats off to them because they're doing big business, and, you know, I wish them all the best because they're a band that's doing what everybody else would hope they could be doing. So I mean, right. Ride that wave until they can't anymore.
Yeah, no, I mean, any band, the way I look at it, it's like any band that can bring rock into this kind of like mainstream thing, it's like, yeah, wave the flag, man.
Well, and you know what? They're not doing what they're not doing, which I appreciate, is I'm not hearing like a formula type of a thing.
Right.
Right. So it sounds to me like they're just writing the music they want to write. It's not like this paint by numbers pop thing. You know, I mean, the pop world is just like, you know, I can't get into it at all.
So bad.
Yeah, so it's awful. So they're definitely, like I say, tapped into a market and a demographic that they're doing big numbers, you know, and I know a lot of people that love Ghost, you know, and, you know, I mean, I was in the mall the other day and I saw a Ghost shirt. I'm like, fuck, they're in the mall. Like, that's great. You know, like, you know,
so funny. Anyway. Man, I gotta have you on all the time. I feel like I could talk to you forever about this shit.
But I have the gift of gab.
No, it's been so great chatting with you. And like I said, I mean, I saw the show back in March, and you guys killed it. And you know, I'm really stoked for the new record that's going to be out in October, which is pretty cool. You know, like you said, you posted that teaser, so you know, fans can kind of direct to the website and the social media and all that stuff. I know, you know, hopefully.
There'll be some new stuff. Yeah, you'll hear some new stuff very, very, very soon. So hope you like it. And yeah, if there's a show that you want to come out to, we'll make sure you're taken care of. Just hit me up and we'll see you there.
Yeah, it was a pleasure having you on. Be sure to check out, like I said, all Queensryche's social media, website, and everything. Be sure to purchase Todd's record, Rejoice in the Suffering. Pretty cool, great record. I'm sure a lot of you have already heard it, but give it another listen. And thank you so much, Todd. I really
thank you very much. Yeah, it's great to be with you. Thanks.